Parshas Miketz, and it's also this week Parshas Miketz comes out after Hanukkah. Generally speaking, though, very often it comes out on Hanukkah itself, and it did so in the year Tavshin Nun Beis, and in that year that Rebbe spoke about the significance of the fact that in all other Yom Tovim and all other Jewish holidays, we celebrate through feasting. We have meals, and there's an obligation to eat on the Yom Tov, as opposed to the Yom Tov of Hanukkah, of which there is no obligation to have a meal. There's no obligation to eat. No mitzvah of seudah. Although the custom is that by one's meals, one should increase in thanksgiving and joy. But there is no obligation to partake of festive meals on the Yom Tov of Hanukkah. Whereas every other Yom Tov, every other Jewish holiday, we do have an obligation to partake of festive meals as a celebration of the Yom Tov of the holiday. So one of the reasons that's given for this that Rebbe brings is that the Yom Tov of Hanukkah is unique in that the salvation was primarily a spiritual one. Rather than in other Yom Tov, the Jews were in physical danger, and the salvation from those decrees represented primarily salvation from physical danger. In the time of Hanukkah, the Jews were primarily oppressed spiritually by the Greeks. And that's the reason that's given, and therefore, instead of celebrating with joyous and festive meals, we celebrate primarily with a spiritual activity, which is the lighting of the Hanukkah menorah. The Rebbe says it's also interesting to note that when we talk about a meal, so the basic staples of a meal are water, bread and water. That's your basic staple. Okay? In the time when we brought carbonus, we also had an obligation on the holidays to eat meat from the sacrifices. But that's a question. And today, when we don't have the sacrifices, so the main expression of joyousness in the holiday meals is through drinking wine. In the time when we had the sacrifices, it was required to eat meat and drink wine. Now it's primarily the obligation of experiencing joy at the meals on Yom Tov is primarily through wine. So your basic staple of your holiday meal, besides whatever you add to it, is your bread and water, which are your basic food staples, and the addition of wine because of the requirement of joy. Whereas on the Yom Tov of Hanukkah, which we don't celebrate through eating and drinking, we celebrate through lighting the menorah, which is connected to oil, olive oil. So the Rebbe says this explanation, that the difference is because it was primarily a spiritual salvation. The Rebbe says the truth is that if we look into it a little deeper, the difference between Hanukkah and the other holidays is not only that it is not limited to that this is a more spiritual holiday and the other holidays are more connected with physical things, but actually within the spiritual nature of all the holidays, this one stands out. Because the Rebbe says, the truth is that, let's say, Purim, when we talk about the decree was primarily aimed at the destruction of the Jewish people in the physical sense. The Rebbe says that if we look at it, we realize that it also has a tremendous spiritual significance. It was not just an issue of physical life and death. There's a tremendous spiritual significance. And so too in the miracle of Pesach, when the Jews were saved from actual slavery. But the fact is, their being saved from slavery was in order that they should be able to receive the Torah. So there is a tremendous spiritual component in the redemption from Egypt. It's not limited to being saved from physical slavery. And similarly in Purim, being saved from the decree of Haman, it says that at that time the Jews reaffirmed their acceptance of the Torah at the time of that miracle. So again, Purim obviously also has a tremendous spiritual significance. It's not limited only to material and physical salvation. So when we say that Chanukah is unique, that is celebrated primarily in a spiritual way, what we're saying is that there's a spiritual quality within Chanukah itself which stands out from amongst all the other holidays, even the spiritual components of those holidays. So the Rebbe says, in order to understand this, we have to first understand the distinction between these four food groups that we mentioned, which is, one is bread, actually, the Rebbe breaks down to three. One is bread and water, then you have wine, and you have oil. We know that the Torah is compared to each of these elements. We find the Torah being compared to bread and water, to bread, to water, to wine, and to oil. Chassidus explains that these different comparisons represent different dimensions within Torah itself. The comparison to bread and water is associated with the revealed portion of the Torah. The comparison to wine is associated with the concealed, deeper, hidden dimension of the Torah. And then within the hidden dimension of Torah, there is an even higher level, which are called Razin the Razin, which literally translates as the secrets within the secrets, that which is an even deeper level of concealment, and that is compared to oil. Which is one of the primary differences between these different types of foods, is that bread and water represent the basic staples and necessities that a person requires in order to subsist. Without bread and water, you don't survive. It's needed. It's a basic need. It's a constant requirement, and it's needed for your basic survival. Wine and oil, on the other hand, wine and oil are actually there to add, on top of the basics, wine and oil add life and pleasure. Wine is described as something which brings joy to man and to God. The wine is something that adds and increases in joy. Joy is something which is in addition to your basic necessity for life, that your life should be a joyful one. Oil corresponds to pleasure. It adds a dimension of pleasure to one's food experience. So within Torah itself, bread and water, which are the basic necessities, correspond to the revealed portion of the Torah. Your basic teachings, which teach you what you're required to do as a Jew, how to fulfill your obligations, your basic requirements as a Jew in order to be able to serve God properly. You need to know the revealed portion of the Torah as it relates to everyday life. The deeper dimensions of Torah, on the other hand, correspond to wine and oil, because what they do is they add increased enthusiasm and pleasure in the service of God. As it says that you should know the God of your father and serve him with a full and complete heart. What it adds is a dimension of extra life and energy and enthusiasm, joy and pleasure into one's divine service. But your basic divine service is, your basic requirements are fulfilled primarily through the study of the revealed portion of the Torah, which correspond to bread and water. It's the deeper dimensions of Torah, the wine and oil within Torah, that add that extra zest and enthusiasm and pleasure in one's divine service. Now, between wine and oil itself, there's still a distinction. Wine represents an aspect of Torah which is, even though it's concealed relative to the revealed portion, but it's that aspect of, it's that part of the concealed dimension of Torah which is more readily accessible. Oil represents, as we said, the secrets within the secrets, that aspect of the concealed portion of Torah which is less readily accessible. And in other places, in this sefer that Rebbe has mentioned, other places of Chassidus, it explains that this corresponds to the difference between how you extract wine from a grape and how you extract oil from an olive. A grape, when it's fully ripe, most eating grapes are actually picked before they're fully ripe. But for winemaking, you wait till the grape is fully ripe. When the grape is fully ripe, you can actually look at the grape and see liquid under the skin. The liquid is readily visible, and all it takes in order to extract that liquid is just to squeeze the grape, to open the skin, and the liquid comes out. Or olives, on the other hand, when you cut open an olive, you don't see any oil in it. You look at an olive, you don't see any oil. Even you cut it open, you don't see oil in it. It's only when you crush it and you squeeze it that the oil actually comes out. In other words, the level of concealment of the wine within the grape is much less than the level of concealment of the oil within the olive. But the Rebbe says that using the analogy of wine and oil as food, so the Rebbe says that wine is something that can be drunk in by itself. Oil, on the other hand, you cannot drink oil by itself. In fact, the halacha is that if a person does drink oil, you don't even make a blessing, you don't even make a bracha, because it's harmful. To drink plain olive oil is harmful to a person. Oil is only used mixed in with other foods. You cannot take it plain. Wine, on the other hand, you drink plain. So again, that represents the idea that wine is, although it's a revelation of a concealed dimension of Torah, but it's that which is much more readily accessible. Oil, on the other hand, represents a level of concealment which is not readily accessible, because you cannot take it plain. It can only be mixed in, and even then, when you mix it in, you can only mix in a small amount. If you try to make food with oil, you put in too much oil, it ruins the whole thing. You can't eat it. You have to mix it in with other foods, and even then, only in small amounts. So the Rebbe explains that this is the significance of the Yom Tov of Chanukah. That the Yom Tov of Chanukah is associated with oil, and the other Yom Tovim are associated with bread, wine, and water, which is how we celebrate those other Yom Tov, through eating and partaking of festive meals which contain bread, water, and wine. The Rebbe explains that since the miracle of Chanukah is connected with oil, and oil represents a level which is much higher, significantly higher than the levels of Torah which are expressed in bread, water, and wine, therefore it was too high to express in physical eating. Just like oil cannot be eaten plain, so too we celebrate the miracle of oil not through eating it as a food, because it's not a food unto itself. So the Rebbe says, well, how do we understand this? How do we understand, according to what we're saying now, that the miracle of Chanukah is associated with oil, and oil represents a level which is much higher than bread, water, and wine, which the other holidays are associated with? The Rebbe says, how could it be? How could it be that the Yom Tov of Chanukah, which took place when the Jewish people were it was a state of terrible spiritual darkness. They already, even with the Beis Hamikdash standing, they were in exile. And not only in exile, but they were in exile by the Greeks that are compared to darkness. And these Greeks were attempting to cause the Jewish people to forget your Torah and to transgress your laws. And to some degree, they were successful. Amongst the Jewish people, unfortunately, for the first time in our history, Chanukah is the first time when we actually had people who bailed out and joined the other side. For the first time, they actually were somewhat successful. So how is it that in such a lowly, when the Jewish people are in such a lowly spiritual state, that the miracle which is associated with that time is associated with oil, which represents the highest spiritual revelations within Torah? So the Rebbe explains that actually, these two are connected. The process of the revelation of Torah, okay, we say that there's the revealed portion of Torah, there's the concealed, and then there's that which is even more concealed. But there's a process whereby everything that was at one point concealed becomes progressively more revealed, till we reach the ultimate redemption, when we experience the ultimate revelation of everything that was concealed. So the Rebbe explains that the process whereby those aspects of Torah which were previously concealed become progressively more revealed, is that as the darkness grows, it becomes more and more necessary to reveal a greater light of Torah in order to combat the darkness. So as the darkness increases, so too does the revelation within Torah increase commensurate to the darkness that we experience in the world around us. So with each added layer of spiritual darkness, what happens is that within Torah, there is that much of a greater measure of spiritual revelation within Torah. So it is specifically at that darkest time, when began the process of the revelation of the deepest, most concealed aspect of Torah, which corresponds to the level of oil, which oil represents the greater concealment in the sense that it cannot be taken as a food unto itself. It is both, it is not a basic staple, and even as something which adds extra flavor and pleasure to one's food experience, it cannot be taken by itself. It can only be taken in small amounts and mixed in with other foods. So the Rebbe says that this revelation of the oil within the Torah enables us to combat the greater darkness of the exile. And this becomes progressively more revealed as the darkness becomes progressively greater. So that's why we find that as the generations get further along, these teachings, which are associated with the oil of Torah, become ever more revealed in greater and greater measure. So the Rebbe says like this, that oil is not only associated with being a greater light, but oil itself is actually a source of light. Right? The term we use in the pasuk is that in the things that were donated to the Mishkan, one of the things was shemen lamor. Oil, it doesn't say oil for light. It says oil to be a source of light. In other words, that through the revelation of the oil of the Torah, it actually reveals the deepest, innermost part of the Torah, that part of the Torah which is the source of all light that is contained within the Torah. So this process is associated specifically with the increased darkness. The Rebbe, in order to explain just to what degree the darkness that the Greeks represent, what is this great spiritual darkness that the Greeks represent? The spiritual darkness that the Greeks represent is actually an attack on the Torah itself. The Greeks are not, it's not an attack on the Jewish people per se. It's an attack on the Torah itself. It's a concealment of the godliness that is contained within Torah. We know that the Greeks were very great philosophers, and very great scholars. Okay? What about the Torah did they oppose? They opposed, first of all, one of the things that they opposed is the idea of prophecy. The idea of Torah being a divine communication. The very idea that Torah is a divine communication is something that they reject. Because they felt, they appreciated the Torah as a very great document, as a book of great wisdom. And as great philosophers, they appreciated the deep philosophical wisdom contained within the Torah. However, the one thing that they refuse to accept is the divine origin of the Torah and the fact that the Torah is a divine communication. Where did they get the power to oppose the Torah in such a way? Where do the Greeks have the power to oppose the Torah? The Rebbe explains that it says that the Torah, not only that, we find that Greek, the Greek language is particularly suited for the translation of Torah. Because the pasuk we say, it says that in the blessings that Noah gave his children, it says, Yaft alekim li yafes, v'yishkan ba'ahal eshen, that God should grant beauty to Yefes, and he should dwell within the tents of shame. And it's explained that what does this mean? It means that the only that Yavan was a descendant of Yefes, child of Yefes. Yavan is Greece. That of all the languages, the only language that is perfectly suited for the translation of Torah with absolute accuracy is Greek. Every other language is does not have the subtleties and nuances which are capable of transmitting and communicating the Torah in its purest form. So Yafta Lekim LeYefes, the beauty of Yefes is expressed in the language of Greek, V'yishkan V'holi Shem, and it dwells in the tents of shame, meaning that the language of the Greek language is a suitable tool with which the Torah to be translated. And yet we find that when the sages actually translated the Torah into Greek, at the behest of Ptolemy, of King Ptolemy, when they did so, it says that that day was as difficult for the Jewish people as the day in which the egel, the golden calf, was made. But the question is, if Greek is the only language that's perfectly suited for communicating Torah, why is it that it was such a terrible, terrible day? It says that it's as difficult for the Jewish people as the day of the making of the golden calf. So the Rebbe explains that the problem was that they did not translate the Torah because of a divine commandment. They translated the Torah at the request of Talmai HaMelech. And because they, and not only that, because it was at his request, and because they were doing it for him, there is a possibility that they could take those teachings and misuse them. If it was a translation that grew out of the fact that there's a divine imperative to bring the Torah down to the level that it could be understood even by those who don't have direct access to Hebrew, to the Holy Tongue, so that would not have been a problem. The problem was that it was done at the request of Ptolemy, and therefore there was a concern, a possibility that it might be abused. So much so that we find that when they did the translation, they made certain changes. They did not do an exact translation. Because they were concerned that he would misunderstand and misuse it, therefore they had to make certain changes. One of the more well-known changes is, on the first words, Bereshis Bara Elokim, in the beginning God created. So you could also conceivably translate the words, in the beginning was created God. So in order to avoid that misunderstanding, they had to change the words around and say God created in the beginning. Because if they would have said in the beginning was created by God, you could also read in the beginning was created God. And therefore they had to turn it around and make it Elokim Bara Bereshis, that God created in the beginning. So since there was this concern that since it was going to fall into the wrong hands, that it might be misused, that is the source of the power that the Greeks had with which to oppose the sanctity of the Torah. And this was their main opposition. The Greeks, as great philosophers, appreciated and enjoyed and admired the brilliance of the wisdom that was contained in the Torah. This is something that they enjoyed and appreciated and respected. What they could not tolerate was the divinity that is contained within the Torah, the godliness, the assistance of the Jewish people, that their faith and their adherence to the Torah is not based on the fact that it's logical. Their relationship with God is not based on logic, and their relationship with Torah is not based on logic. Their relationship to God is based on faith, the faith that God transcends all wisdom and all logic and transcends all attempts at rational understanding. And similarly, Torah, that even though the Torah was given in such a way, that it can be comprehended by the human intellect, still in all, its source is divine, and it in and of itself completely transcends the rational. This is what the Greeks opposed. So what was the miracle? The miracle was that they found a flask of oil, and not just oil, but shemen tahar, oil that was had not been defiled. And it was not just oil that had not been defiled, but it was sealed with the seal of the high priest. So all of this represents a level of purity with it, of the oil itself, which is a level which the Greeks could not oppose and could not in any way defy. And that is what we talk about, the shemen, the pure oil of Torah. The pure oil of Torah, that's the level of Torah. The level of Torah, which is the deepest of the deep. The secrets within the secrets. The deepest levels of Torah, which actually communicate the godliness and the divinity of Torah. And this is the miracle of Hanukkah, that the revelation of the oil of the Torah, that which allows and enables a Jew, that not only when he's studying these deepest teachings, that he can experience and be aware and conscious of the divinity of Torah, but even when dealing with the levels of Torah, when dealing with the level of Torah which deals with the revealed portion of Torah, which deals with everyday life issues, that and it's meant to be understood on a rational, logical level. Those aspects of Torah which deal with everyday life issues, there it's much easier to lose sight of the fact of the divinity and the godliness within the Torah, because it seems to deal with everyday, mundane life situations. And once one gets into the logic behind all of the different laws and so on, it's very easy to lose sight of the divinity and godliness within the Torah. It is specifically through the revelation of the oil of Torah, those deeper dimensions of Torah, which deal directly with issues of divine expression within reality, that deal specifically with revelations of and comprehension of godliness, that we are able to relate to the Torah and appreciate the divinity and godliness within the Torah. However, at that point, yes. So the Rebbe says as follows, that at that time, the revelation of the oil of Torah was still not complete. Because as we said, oil could only be mixed in, cannot be taken plain, and it could only be mixed in a few drops into your regular food, in other words. What happened at the time of the miracle of Hanukkah was that the primary involvement of the Jewish people continued to be the study of the revealed portion of the Torah. That was their primary involvement. The revelation of the oil of Torah, that deeper dimension of Torah, which is the source of the light of Torah, which reveals the divinity of Torah, was mainly used in order to experience and relate to the divinity which is contained within the revealed portion of the Torah. But the primary study and involvement was still in the revealed portion of the Torah, to the point that even hundreds of years later, in the time of Rav Shimon bar Yochai, who revealed the deeper teachings of the Torah even more, it still was only for unique, select individuals. This was not something that was taught in any public kind of way. It was not available and accessible to the public. It's only later, in the time of the Arizal, that the Arizal says that it's even permitted. And at his time, the Arizal said that it's a mitzvah as well to reveal this wisdom. But even so, there were conditions attached to it, even in the times of the Arizal. Who could learn it and how it could be learned? It's starting with Yutes Kislev, when the teachings of the Baal Shem Tov and his disciple, the Maggid, through the Alter Rebbe, were revealed in a way that they could actually be understood not only to the public at large, but that they could actually be understood and comprehended in and of themselves. In other words, they were not just there to add inspiration and to add a little flavor to the revealed portion of the Torah. But it actually became a subject that could be studied in and of itself in a way that could be fully grasped and comprehended by human intellect. In other words, it actually became like a food unto itself. So this process of the revelation of the oil of Torah as it begins on Hanukkah, so at that point, it's only the beginnings. But as the darkness gets progressively greater, we actually get to a point where the oil of Torah becomes, stands more and more on its own, to the point that now it actually becomes like a food unto itself. It can actually be taken by itself and studied, and in fact it's necessary, and even more necessary than the other aspects of Torah, in order to combat the darkness. In terms of combating the darkness, it's not only become an essential of life, but in terms of knowing how to conduct oneself in everyday life, still it's the revealed portion of the Torah that is your basic essential nutritional requirement. But in order to combat the tremendous spiritual darkness of the time, especially by the fact that the tremendous outpouring and discovery of outside forms of wisdom, outside of Torah, the wisdom and knowledge of the sciences has exploded in an unprecedented way and was exploited and used by people in order to oppose the Torah in ways that had never been before. It's the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, when the whole idea of Bible criticism came about, and the whole idea of attempting through science to actually disprove the Torah. The Greeks didn't even oppose the Torah itself, they opposed the sanctity of the Torah. Now we have a level where science, where people who call themselves scientists attempt to use their wisdom to actually, in their own minds at least, attempt to disprove the very factual basis of the Torah itself, and to try and to reject the wisdom of the Torah entirely. So as the darkness and the opposition to the wisdom of Torah grows stronger and stronger, the revelation of the deepest dimension of Torah grows commensurately, to the point that it has now become an essential requirement for Torah life in order to be able to survive this darkness. And the manner in which it's been revealed is that it can be taken in and ingested like any other food, meaning just like what this means on an intellectual level is that you could actually understand and comprehend it. It's something that you can, just like food, you eat it and it actually becomes digested and becomes part of the person. So similarly, these teachings, which traditionally were considered in and of themselves transcended human intellect, have now been brought down to a level that they could be ingested and internalized and actually become part of the person themselves. So Yutes Kislev, within the month of Kislev, the holiday of Hanukkah, Yutes Kislev is actually complements and is the ultimate expression of that which began at the time of the holiday of Hanukkah. This process of revelation continues from Yutes Kislev till this very day. It's not something that just took place on Yutes Kislev. It continues through each of the Rabbeim that followed, to the point that when the Enlightenment movement actually began to establish schools in Russia, traditionally the Enlightenment, the reform, was traditionally stationed in Western Europe, and never made any real inroads into Russia. It was in the time of the Rebbe Rashab that the reform movement made significant inroads into Russia and actually established a school system which was meant to undermine the traditional cheder system. And the Rebbe Rashab said that the reason why he's establishing the yeshiva of Taim Chet Mimim is in response to the fact that they established a school system to spread their teachings. And therefore it has become necessary that we establish a school as well. And it wasn't just the chiddush of the Nevi'im Hashem is not just that he established a school, but that the point of establishing the school was that it should be a school where the study of panemius, the study of the deeper hidden dimensions of Torah, should be studied in such a way exactly like the revealed portions of the Torah are studied. It should be studied in the same way that the revealed portion of Torah is studied, in a way that is comprehended and understood, and starting from ever younger ages. The Rebbe says, however, as we talk, there's a deeper element to the revelation of the deeper dimension of Torah. Till now we've spoken in terms of the fact that as the darkness increases, it becomes necessary that there be a greater light to combat the darkness. The Rebbe says, but there really is a deeper process playing out. When we say the darkness is getting ever increasingly greater, that's only the superficial view of reality. Actually, what's actually happening is we're actually getting closer and closer to the revelation of Mashiach. As we get closer and closer to the revelation of Mashiach, so that is why that is expressed, the fact that we're getting closer and closer to the revelation of Mashiach is expressed by the fact that there are progressively greater revelations of divinity and godliness within Torah itself. That is what's really happening, is an expression of the fact that we're getting closer and closer to the ultimate revelation. In other words, revelation is growing. In fact, it ever says the reason why the darkness appears to become increasingly greater is because those forces that oppose this ultimate revelation of, as Mashiach gets closer, those forces that oppose this ultimate revelation have to increase their opposition in order to try to hold off that ultimate revelation. So on the surface, what's happening is these revelations are taking place in order to combat the darkness. What's really happening is, on a deeper level, these greater revelations are taking place in anticipation of and in preparation for the ultimate revelation. At that time, not only will the study of the deeper dimension of Torah be something which you mix in the form of little drops, but we said that beyond that, we've already reached a point where it can be studied by itself. At that time, we're told that the primary involvement of the Jewish people will be studying the deeper dimensions of Torah. In fact, in Tanya, he says that we will know the laws from studying the deeper significance, from studying the godly reality. That's how we will know the laws from that. We won't even have to study directly the revealed portion of Torah. Our knowledge of the laws will come directly because our study of Torah will be exclusively in the realm of the concealed, that which had been previously concealed, and at that time will be fully revealed, the oil that is contained within Torah itself. And it is this process that's playing out in each progressive generation, and is expressed by the fact that when the Rebbe Rashab established Temchit Tmimim, he said that he's on one level he said that it was to combat the darkness. On the other hand, he said that they are the soldiers of the house of David, the soldiers of the house of David, whose their job is to actually bring about the redemption. And this is something which has been done increasingly more and more in the time of the Friedrich Rebbe. And the Rebbe establishing branches of Temchit Tmimim all over the world and sending out these soldiers to every part and every corner of the world in order to bring about, to prepare the world and actually bring about the revelation of Mashiach. And the Rebbe says that is emphasized even more so in our time, when we've already reached the point, as the Rebbe says, where everything is already ready and the only thing that's left to do is open our eyes and see how the redemption is already here, and that is the ultimate completion. In other words, we're fully at the end of the process of revelation, at least within the darkness of the world, and we're fully ready, and we only have to do our last step of opening our eyes in order to be able to merit and immediately the full and complete redemption.